If you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson back on the show, because he returns to discuss, to get his perspective on this ongoing, scamdemic, panicdemic, however you want to call it, the COVID-19 op. Of course, Dr. Johnson is the author of many books, including The Third Rome, Holy Russia, Tsarism, and Orthodoxy. And, of course, the political thought of Vladimir Putin. Of course, his website is rusjournal.org, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Anything else you want to add to that?
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I'm in the land of I haven't gotten my damn stimulus check yet, so I send you greetings. Yeah.
Gee. The stimulus check. Yes, to our relief checks from not keeping us from working. We just don't have to go to work. The government just print checks for everyone forever, and then we'll all be good.
Oh, sure. No inflation will come from that.
For no working, no production, and just money printing? Yeah. I want to get your take on this ongoing thing. Of course, up in Pennsylvania, you have Governor Wolf, and he's been one of the more, I guess, tyrannical governors. I've heard some restrictions are easing. I'm sure it's sort of the slow, grinding removal of the restrictions with all types of conditions and these things to usher us into the new normal up there. There was recently I read an article that the Wolf administration was caught adding 269 names. I think this was back in April to the coronavirus death list right after there was a protest and they had to rescind that. So they were caught fudging the numbers. And, of course he's been very strict in terms of churches and also small businesses. So the people in Pennsylvania, as in many other states, are sort of, suffering under these restrictions that are just now gradually being removed. Of course, this isn't very much help because they've done so much damage to the economy. And these businesses, at least my take on it, is the restrictions they're imposing on these businesses make it so their businesses won't be viable. So they go under anyway, under the guise of a public health, measure, keeping people safe, social distancing and these things, which is, there's no science to that anyway. It's a psyop. But anyway, I want to get your take. You're up there in Pennsylvania. What's your take on the Wolf administration and his wonderful public health administrator?
Well, it's really an unfair question because that would require me to think about the public health administrator. And, she really needs to come with a warning label. It should come with a warning label. I can't look at that freak of nature. To have a health minister with that level of mental illness, to not know what gender it is, and have that shoved in your face every night, is that in and of itself is a psyop. The hell with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. That's the issue. This person is making these policies with that obvious agenda. Wolf is extremely unpopular. You have counties like Armstrong County near me that has something like 50 cases and zero deaths that are still, more or less locked down. We're using a color-coded system, red to yellow to green. Red is total lockdown. Yellow, you know, I've been telling people that the ambiguity in the, no one's quite sure what yellow means. No one's quite sure what green means because all of the criteria are provisional. The only thing now that really can't be open are restaurants and anything that has any kind of intimate contact. Apparently the governor is exempt, but massage parlors, that kind of thing. Restaurants are closed for everything but takeout. I think the place is 25. Now, the way up north, most of that is in the green. I'm still in yellow, although it's going to change. Cambria County Armstrong is going to change it, I think, in a week, at two at the most. Now, I used to think that green meant everything went back to normal. That is not true. Again, and that keeps changing. Green is a semi-permanent status, and it actually says, you know, this is going to be the new normal, using that exact phrase. Again, it could change tomorrow. The ambiguity is deliberate. People are always on their guard. And I think people are wearing masks really just to keep from getting yelled at. I do it reluctantly only because I know that the management of any of these companies can get fined and have money taken out of their check by the company if it shows up on the security camera that people aren't wearing masks. On the other hand, I do deliberately seek out the one-way aisles and go down the wrong way. I've yet to be yelled at. Everyone ignores those stupid things. They have nothing to do with anything. And usually the people who are worried about it, I mean, obviously the Karen's worried about everything, but, you know, the older folks, and you don't say anything to older folks, just let them go. Where I am in Cambria County, there's a handful of cases. The places that are on yellow right now, only a handful of cases. I'm happy to report, though, that the retail shops that have been opened are doing okay. They're not quite to 100%, but like you saw in Colorado, you know, you had this explosion of spending. And I think it's the same as the case with Wisconsin when the Supreme Court struck down all of these mandates. Now, my view is this. If you're a business owner, especially a small business owner, you're probably coming to the end of your savings and that kind of resources. I would simply reopen and take what's coming to me with the understanding that you'll probably do well in court when your court date comes around. And it's certainly better than going out of business now. The problem that with that, though, is that if you have a business that has a license, a liquor license, you're a member of a board, the private sector can pull that. You lose a liquor license, as expensive as they are, you're in a lot of trouble. So, you know, this is one of the things, if not the only thing, that's keeping places compliant, is that their license could be pulled. And that's a private sector matter. The cops in many places are not enforcing this. They have other things to do. They're not going into a small business and shutting them down. You have sheriff's departments all over the place refusing to engage in this order. I know there's at least two states that struck all of this down. And just as importantly, I just had a speech in Russian pulled from Facebook of Alexander Lukashenko from Belarus. I've been a supporter of him for many, many years, who's been giving speeches, condemned the entire operation. You have maybe a handful of cases, I mean, relative to the population, small number of cases in Belarus, just a handful of, I think there's 209 deaths total, and they've done absolutely nothing. There's no mandate whatsoever. The only mandate would be if you're a foreigner coming to Belarus, you have to go into quarantine for a while. But as far as citizens go, you know, they have parades. They had a victory parade, you know, right after everyone was locked down. And, you know, they're relatively unaffected. I think Sweden's in the same boat. A few other places. So when this first started, I remember I was posting this all over the place. I actually saw a headline in the, I think it's the Hindi Times in India. And the headline, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is very close, said, we see, I think it was at the time, 8 cases of the virus in India, country under lockdown. I saw the same thing in Indonesia. 10 cases, country under lockdown. Kazakhstan, in the beginning, 0 cases, everything is shutting down. And this is Orwellian. 8 cases, country under martial law, sections under martial law. I mean, this was, there's something, you know, right away, I said, this is twisted. Kazakhstan to this day has a handful of cases. They have this giant border with China. And, you know, they, you know, still under lockdown. The one country not under lockdown is China, because they're back to work. And of course, Belarus, and I think Sweden, and now Wisconsin and Oregon. And there's no spike in cases. So these lockdown operations have much to do with politics. It has nothing to do with science or virology. So that's my introductory view for the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the empirical data is in those countries, or even those states that didn't do a lockdown, were doing marginally better than those states that did. We have that both examples here in the United States and also around the world. And it was astonishing to see that, you know, basically it was the wealthier, more developed countries seemed to have the lockdown imposed, whereas countries that weren't, like Cambodia, you know, weren't locked down. And so you can from that infer some sort of geopolitical or broader, you know, economic agenda afoot here, sort of resetting the global economy and sort of setting the world into some sort of global depression to impose an austerity so they can implement some sort of transition, both economic and social. I think we've gotten that impression, you know, from Bill Gates's several appearances and some of the suggestions of what, you know, we'll have to accept in order for us to emerge from our house arrest, whereas, you know, contact tracing, 24/7 surveillance, mandatory testing, you know, repeat testing, I suppose, because that's how you get the numbers up. But also, of course, the mandatory vaccines, you know, which perhaps is a bridge too far at this point. I mean, your state, I was just recently, your wonderful public health administrator, Rachel Levine, I think he calls himself.
Yeah, that's a Hindu name, I think.
Yeah. Yes. And another, of course, your governor up there, right? He's another Hindu, right?
Yes. Yes. Hardcore Hindu. Yeah. Wolf is typical. Yep.
Yeah. And so we have, I'm not saying it's the only thing, but you do have various Hindu governors in Illinois, in Pennsylvania, being particularly, harsh towards churches, not letting them open up. Now, of course, there are other governors like Governor Newsom, our own governor down here. So I don't know if that's really, you know, an issue here, but I don't think you can discount that. But the overall animosity towards religion itself, and the fact that particularly the Catholic Church, which I think Catholic Church is particularly unique because it has the institutional, I think, reach and depth and history that it could have actually provided a real stumbling block or point of opposition to these shutting down of churches during Holy Week. And yet it just completely backed down. In fact, it didn't even create a confrontation because they just agreed to do it, and they're dragging their feet now. And then I suspect when they reopen the churches, the parishioners are gonna have to go through sort of a bewildering set of new normal regulations like social distancing and masking, and that's something that I am not going to participate in because I think at that point the church is being utilized to as part of the psyop. In these things, just my position is that the social distancing that they're expecting or requiring, businesses, social gatherings, civil society can't function under those terms. So it's just a way to destroy that under the guise again of a public health emergency. It's also the scare of the pandemic, the hysteria and fear that's been whipped up by politicians and by corporations and by the media. And one has to notice sort of the monolithic response of this is revealing, I think, they've created mass hysteria and sort of a mass psychosis. And I think we got an example of that. I don't know if you saw the videotape of that a grocery store in Staten Island where the crowd chased the two women out for not wearing masks. It was like a 2-minute hate. And it was threatening. And it's astonishing to watch. It really shows the sort of the sickness that has set in so many people. People have really been driven crazy by this. And I would like to think that those two women could find out who the participants were, because I do think there is grounds for if not a criminal case, but a civil lawsuit against those people who participated, and if not the store, because they were physically threatening them. And it really is astonishing to see people reacting that way. But this is what happens when you create this hysteria, you know.
Well, you're right. Believe it or not, that's actually a crime to threaten to beat somebody
mm-hmm.
Over an issue that has no basis in science, no basis in medicine, that wearing this mask has any connection with public health. The mask is a talisman. It's almost a symbol of compliance. It's a virtue signal in and of itself, having no foundation in reality. Well, I just saw today, and this is probably the biggest name in this field, Professor Klaus Puschel, who is actually the chief medical examiner in all of Germany. He's the top of the field there. He's a professor at the Hamburg Central Medical School, and he's completed a study of hundreds of autopsies of people allegedly dying of the virus. And he discovered that there isn't a single person that he's autopsied that wasn't extremely sick to begin with. There was no healthy people who got this and just keeled over. And he's continuing this. This is a longitudinal thing where he's, and he has access to everything. He's the biggest name in that field in Germany. I've posted it in a few places. It's going to be going soon. He was interviewed in German, but it has subtitles where he's explaining in depth the science of it all. His personal opinion, this is an expert opinion, is that it's really not particularly harmful. At most, it's the last little push that very, very sick people have to finally keel over. Now, that's probably the biggest name to come out here and condemn the entire thing. Then he goes on to a psychological analysis, and he says a lot of the same things I've been saying. What are the psychological ramifications going to be once this is over? In terms of medical, in terms of mental health, this is a crisis all over the place. Creating this image of this phantom enemy that could be lurking anywhere and can't be seen. And worse, pushing the idea of being asymptomatic, so you could be perfectly fine and still be dying.
Yeah.
In the system. But of course, that whole notion of being asymptomatic means that a lot more people have it than we realize, which means that the death rate is minuscule. The cruise ship proved that. The aircraft carrier proved that. The cruise ship had a very, very low death rate, even amongst the elderly. And those who did die, I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. It was in the news for a while, about a month ago. It's about 2%. But since cruises, especially now, are populated largely by older people, it's a biased sample right there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the aircraft carrier, these are all healthy guys. Now, Puschel, as far as I know, hasn't exactly made headlines. But he also went on to say, as did Lukashenko in Belarus in his speech, that since this is such a common, it's a very general virus. There's lots of COVIDs out there.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us have it. Most of us have some variation of that in our system at all times. We just build up an immunity to it. So how easy is it to have someone who dies of a heart attack to legitimately find a variation of this virus in the system and say he died of COVID-19?
Yeah, or submit to a test and come out positive, yeah.
What was the African country, that guy, he was it Tanzania?
I think it was Tanzania, yeah, the fruit that came out positive.
That was the funniest thing, because he knew there was something wrong. The Africans, certainly don't trust anything coming from the first world, and I think they did it on a few animals and a couple of fruit, and it all came back positive.
Mm-hmm.
But even mainstream people are talking about the false positives.
The CDC came out and said the antibody test is at least 50% are false positives. So,
and if the CDC is saying it, what's the real number? You know, it must be higher than that.
If I'm not mistaken, the CDC, I said no less than three times, said don't wear masks. And the masks themselves have disclaimers that said not for, they don't prevent the spread of disease. You know, they have a disclaimer, yet again, but it is a religious thing, because it's almost, I commented a while back, said I don't want any American making fun of Iranians or Saudi Arabians or Muslims for their women for wearing hijabs or, you know, or anything, because look what we're doing. I mean, at least they have some, to them, it's a sense of modesty or something. It's, you know, for us, it's fear and it's insane, you know. They have more dignity than we do. But it's interesting, you know, this guy Lukashenko, who, you know, in the press will call him a dictator, but here he is letting his people go out and work and live a life, and our elected officials here are acting like dictators. You know, it's quite an irony, you know.
Lukashenko is one of my favorite politicians on the planet. Only how he wins election, roughly with that percentage. And Putin's the same way. So it's a multi-party system with a press that's a lot freer than in the West. You know, they don't have two or three conglomerates, Hindu conglomerates, that control the press. They have they have state media, which is perfectly legitimate, but of course it's balanced out by private media. Mm-hmm. And just to make this clear, you know, I've been reading state media with Sana in Syria all the time. State ownership does not mean control. Same thing goes for China. You know, most of the Chinese are private, but they do have the state sector too. And they're far from a mouthpiece. The state, at least partially state-owned press in Russia, usually tends to be anti-Putin. Not everyone who in the state who may have control over this. State media doesn't mean anything. We have to get that out of control. Press and the oligarchs. But look, and this is the show I posted has snippets from speeches. And he makes points. It's not in English, but I was able to read. First of all, he points out tree making a killing here. That's one of the first thing he's been over again. Number two, that the scientific established power that they force, that these guys have power that's going to give back anytime soon. Number three, he does come out and say, because his whole political that means that big firms, you know, Walmart's, Martin's, places like that, they can survive a month and a half of reduced clientele. The mom and pop stores can't. So you get the small and medium sized competition out of the way. This will benefit the major firms. And the other point he makes, of course, is the creation of fear. You know, this whole notion of this invisible enemy. He says this over and over again. And this is why he's extremely popular there. And finally, he does mention the religious thing.
I'm sorry, you broke up there. This is Lukashenko?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I want to make it clear to my audience. The Skype is breaking up there, so I just wonder. Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess you got the general idea. He also mentions the religious thing. He says he's noticing all over the place that churches are being closed down, often with the full cooperation of the churches themselves. Now, here in America, the Orthodox Church in America, which is a liberal group, I have nothing to do with them, they were mandating closures long before it was actually mandated. They're threatening parishioners and clergy to, you know, follow state mandates and go beyond state mandates. Some of these people condemn the old Church of the Soviet Union for following the Soviet state, but of course they were looking at the gulag if they disobeyed. Mm-hmm. What are these guys looking at? This is their whole job, is to go to war against this kind of nonsense. They're taking names. They're using the snitch lines to get rid of people. It's you know, so these guys, they're so worried about currying favor with the system and maintaining tax exempt status that they're willing to. I mean, they're going to start using the thing that measures your temperature, the non-invasive method.
Mm-hmm.
They're mandating all of this stuff, and they don't even have to. And like you said, it happens right at Holy Week. Our Holy Week was a week after yours. And so these guys are going beyond what the state demands, claiming that we're subject to the authorities, as if that's, you know, a biblical or traditional point of view. So Lukashenko points this out. He says these people are the first ones to surrender, and their job is to do exactly the opposite. So these are some of the reasons why he's as popular as he is. And of course, having zero mandates there, they have 209 deaths as of yesterday. So it's proof that the entire thing is a scam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the collapse of the churches, and particularly the hierarchy, I mean, I take it as a sign of a great apostasy, and a clear message that house cleaning is in order, not just in the political class, but also in the religious hierarchy. Because clearly there's these bishops are not protecting their flock, and they're participating in the erosion of the faith they're supposed to promote and protect and evangelize for.
You know, in the Roman Church, the cardinal, the Monsignor, wears red, not because it's pretty, because it represents blood. Mm-hmm. It means that they have a desire to shed their blood for the faith if necessary. That's part of their job.
Yes.
But if they're going to snap to attention over something like this, what's going to happen when things get worse?
Yes.
And the Protestants down south have actually been pretty good about this. They're taking this to court, and they're winning all over the place.
Yeah, they're actually fighting back, and the tragedy is the Catholic Church that with a parish in every city, they could have said no, we're not going to do this, and the government would have backed down. But I think in many cases, it's not a question of not having the fight in them. I think a lot of them are plants, or they're compromised. This is what all that corruption pays off for the state, for the system.
Well, as far as the Church of Rome is concerned, I mean, anyone who recognizes this clown pope can't be respected as a normal human being. This clown pope rejects his own church, rejects his own office, rejects his own papacy. I think the Orthodox have far less of an excuse, given what happened in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
But they're harsher on this than they are anything else. The rhetoric that they use against their clergy, I wish they were like that on other issues. Problem with the Church of Rome, of course, is this make-believe abuse scandal has, no pun intended, has castrated them.
Yeah.
And they're scared to death of every little thing. There's very, very few convictions, but it doesn't matter because the accusation is bad enough. Orthodox doesn't have that excuse either. They're not much of a threat to the system because there's not that many of us. So they were mandating this long before they had to. It was absolutely pathetic, given everything that Orthodoxy has been through in the East.
Mm-hmm.
And Lukashenko is not the only one who mentions it. Now, the Protestants, I think it was in both Kentucky and Tennessee, won in court.
Yeah, they hung the governor in effigy in Kentucky and Frankfort.
It's a shame to be shown up by people like this.
Yeah.
But at least, they're doing the right thing here. And the fact is they're winning. So then the churches know that they're not going to get in any trouble, and they do it anyway.
Well, the law is clear. I mean, how about shall not infringed? Don't they understand? I mean, they have the power. If no one, if you don't defend your rights, you don't have any rights. Did you read the appeal written by Cardinal Vigano?
I did not.
Okay, I recommend you read that. It was a great piece. He talks about the church, how the state having no jurisdiction or authority over the liturgy or the mass, or how people receive communion, or even how many people go to mass. The church has a responsibility to continue and give access to the sacraments, and even called out this whole thing as a pretext for evil world government and corporate profiteering and scientific dictatorship. So it's very conspiratorial. I mean, pretty much she, Vagano is a fellow traveler for you and I, with you and I, and he's sort of fighting this rearguard action with inside the Vatican. So, you know, there's sort of a civil war, I think, inside the Vatican. I think probably as there always is, but right now I think it's the corruption is so has been so laid bare for all to see. That there's a clear crisis coming within at least within the Catholic Church, but yeah, like you said, within the American Orthodox Church, these churches, because clearly the bishops don't have the their flock's interest at heart, and yeah, it is a function of being brick and mortar men, you know, protecting your own little you want to protect what you have, you don't want to lose your tax exempt status, that's a control measure in and of itself, but again, that I don't think that was even at stake here. They could have just said no, and I mean, even at the peak, there was never anything really unique or anything real dangerous out there. I mean, I think the global death rate is 0.00050 or something. 355,000 people around the world, by the way. You know, when the flu will take anywhere from 650,000 to a million a year in any given year. And of course, well, we all know about what they've been doing. I mean, you alluded to it, but what they've been doing with the death certificates, creating tens of thousands of deaths that, you know, that are not COVID deaths, just so they can boost the numbers.
Well, USC did a similar study using LA County, and Stanford did it in Santa Clara, and they come to the same conclusion. You know, these are mainstream people getting money from the system and grant agencies and government and elsewhere. And they're being honest. Just like a mask is a talisman, so is the reference to science with a capital S.
Mm-hmm.
That has nothing to do with actual science. It's a ideological statement. Most of these people wouldn't know what the scientific establishment does on a day-to-day basis if their life depended on it. All they know is that in certain areas, they support their agenda. But if you're going to cite the scientific community, which is deeply divided like it always is, they're not on their side. I can say the same for global warming too.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact that the press doesn't report them doesn't mean they don't exist. So some people are condemned for not having a scientific degree, to which I answer, well, you guys usually are talking about history and politics without having a degree. It doesn't seem to bother you. And the reporters and politicians don't have one either. And yet you're the mediators of all of this information. The press is, as always, at the center here. You know, the press numbers have been going, media numbers have been collapsing for the last 15 years. Now that's changed because everyone is glued to their television. You know, the old meme that goes around saying, if you didn't have television, you wouldn't know that there's any crisis. It's something that's artificially created. And really, most people don't know the first thing about this stuff, so they could say any damn thing they want. You know, Johnson's Law, the more obscure the issue, the more the media can lie about it because there's so few people to contradict them. And how easy it is to shut those people down anyway, no matter what their expertise is. Oh, I mentioned Pushel already. There's no one, he's one of the top people in the world here. And, you know, we're not going to be hearing much from him. And who knows, maybe he may commit suicide tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But no one could deny and of course, the scientific establishment in Belarus and in Russia. Russia is now back to normal. China is back to normal. And it's you know, so citing science is such a dishonest, lazy argument. And they generally don't, they have no consensus, but if one existed, it's certainly not on their side.
Well, they keep saying we're developing policy, implementing policy based on the science and the data. And they don't get any more specific than that. But like I said, we do have some empirical data now. And like I said, the social distancing, there was never any science behind it. I think the idea of social distancing is traced back to a 14-year-old girl who won a third-place science fair contest. So there's no science, or definitely not with the masks, right? I mean, they don't even have a standard mask to wear. It's like, you know, Nancy Pelosi wears her stylish, silk scarf mask, you know, but you see all types of masks. And it's funny thing how, you know, how 3 weeks ago, no one was wearing masks, and like no political figure was. Wasn't really showing up on the news or anything like that. But now they started everyone wearing masks to get everyone acclimated to it. And now everyone's watching it on TV, and it seems like it's the thing to do. And I've said this, that, you know, they could say, go out, you have to wear purple bunny ears, and half the public would do it because they're being told to do it without any critical thought. You know, in Germany, in order to be able to go to a cafe, they're making, I guess, people who are patronizing the cafe wear, you know, swimming noodles that float in the pool.
Yep.
Wear a hat, and it extends out, and you don't get any close. You don't get that close to someone. So a lot of this is again, I think it's a psyop. It's about humiliation. The same way that you know, up in Pennsylvania, you have to endure press conferences with Mr. Renee Levine, or sorry, Rachel Levine, pretending to be a woman. And, you know, I asked myself, why would you want someone in charge of public health who's so narcissistic, so deluded, and he's talking about health? He's implementing policy. But again, he probably doesn't even believe it himself. I think this is an act of public humiliation to make the public accept these things. The same way you make the public – it's almost like what can we make them do and have no one question it, or at least no one of it in any political authority question it. And that's what's so astonishing, is that there's no one of any stature politically who's calling this out. At this point, you can't call it out, because to call it out would cause the whole system to collapse, because they've gone so far out on the limb on it. They have to kind of stretch this out and sort of to rationalize everything that they've done already, all the destruction, economic destruction that they've done. But I also think at the other end of this, they're destroying the economy on purpose for the very thing you talk. So places like Walmart, Amazon, the big corporations can absorb more of the economy, destroy, whittle away at the middle class, and create sort of a neo-feudalistic order that they want to do, where everyone's very few are very rich and everyone's poor. And that's what they're creating. And look what they're doing with the economy. Their public debt's skyrocketing and production is plummeting. What does that do ultimately to the value of the currency? And I think ultimately maybe they want to destroy not just the U.S. dollar, but currency itself, because they want to institute sort of a social credit system, or sort of and that's enforced through this technocracy that we're seeing them unfold or implement under the guise, again, of public health. You know, mandatory vaccines, contact tracing, and what that means is everyone being monitored, everyone being subjected to arbitrary quarantining based on the test results, which they admit aren't reliable. You know, the more you think about them, this is just crazy. And the whole thing really, I really think the whole thing really is, whatever reality is to the virus, and that's subject to debate, the whole thing really is just a big operation. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree. When this first hit, I had been writing for the previous, but ever since 2008, that the system was in a permanent state of depression. I mean, economic depression.
Mm-hmm.
That's a word that is banned informally in all major media. They'll refer to it as a great recession, but the word depression with a capital D is not permitted, even though the real numbers suggest it. There was no recovery from 2008. Paul Craig Roberts, one of my favorite writers, used to be the assistant treasury secretary under Reagan, has exposed all the make-believe figures that the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out, all the macroeconomic nonsense. Inflation is far higher, and there's no question that unemployment is far higher. The unemployment figure only covers people who are at the moment receiving benefits. There's a lot. It doesn't include underemployment either. It's consistently been about 20% since the crash of 2008. So the system's been in depression for a long time. There's no doubt about it. But now with the virus and the system crashes, they could say, well, this isn't our fault. It's not our own irrationality. The virus is at fault. Now, all of a sudden, the Financial Times is using the word depression, because now it's okay, because you could blame the virus for it. Trump's and, you know, CIA, you know, trying to blame China for this. And even trying to start a war there, whether it be from India or Taiwan, whatever it might be at the moment, is a great way to distract from the failure of the Western world to deal with anything, either too much or too little. At least in China, about 100 public health officials have been arrested for incompetence in dealing with this. Wuhan is back to work. People don't realize Wuhan is a huge city. It's a multinational city with a private press. That institute receives grant money from establishments in every country, especially the United States. This is an international body. It's not China. It's not Chinese necessarily. This is all over the – you can't control information that comes from that. China informed the World Health Organization in January 7th, the very first time they noted human-to-human transmission of this, what they called an unknown virus that causes pneumonia, sent all the data straight to the WHO. The Chinese health statistics anyone can access them. There's no way to control that information. And China is certainly hasn't been a Marxist system, at least since the new constitution of 1979. I have a lengthy paper explaining this. To claim that somehow they're lying or that this is their fault or even a bioweapon, the worst bioweapon in history.
Yes.
whoever designed this is going to get fired. And so, using these distraction scenarios, possibly even starting a war, we know by 1940, the U.S. wasn't coming out of the Depression. It wasn't going to happen. The only thing that did it was World War II. And there the federal government took over the entire economy, and then you had a labor shortage. My fear is that both because of inflation, mass unemployment, mass discontent, picking a fight with the Chinese, which they've already been doing, claiming that their military planes near China are being shadowed by fighters from the China, which certainly makes sense from their point of view, anything to try to provoke them into a war. And Putin and Xi are saying, do not engage them. We know what they're trying to do. The point being, as the economy collapses, picking a war with a superpower like China, which the U.S. can't win, at least can distract attention and could possibly revitalize parts of the economy, just like happened in 1941. That's a terrifying idea. And it seemed to be the case. Sven and I have done show after show where the U.S. is doing everything in their power to provoke either Russia or China into taking action. And the U.S. is being very aggressive, sending their spy planes right over military bases and things like that, being really blatant about it. Then complaining if they do anything about it and claiming that this is war over and over and over again. They're doing everything in their power to provoke these countries, which is going to be a bloodbath for this for the U.S. The military is overstretched as it is. It's not going to they're not going to win. But at least, no one's going to be thinking about the collapse of the economy and things may even recover just like it did in 1942. Mm-hmm. That's the most terrifying aspect of all of this. Picking a war to distract attention, that's a big deal.
Well, we have seen, although the economy has tanked and anywhere from 35 to 40 million Americans have been thrown out of work into the unemployment rolls overnight, and not by the coronavirus, but by the lockdown. The government, various state government, this is done primarily at the state level, although the Trump administration did sort of kind of declaring an emergency kind of gave them the green light. But they've locked the economy down. Some people have inferred from this electoral, interest, meaning that they could tank the economy and this, they could hope to win the White House and gain congressional seats and all that. But I, although that may be a part of it, and that actually may be a miscalculation on their part, because maybe they'll get blamed for it. I mean, you think the people in the states would blame the various governors, which seems to be the case, like Whitmore and out there Michigan, and of course Wolf in Pennsylvania, and yeah, of course you have Gavin Newsom out in California. Here we have a wonderful governor, who's and then of course then there's Larry Hogan in Maryland. He's a Republican actually, but the oligarch, the billionaires, they've gotten a lot wealthier. As the economy has collapsed, people like Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates have actually seen an enormous increase in their net worth in the past couple months. And so that there we can see right there how the imposition, the creation of this crisis of this pandemic, of the panic-demic, and then the response to it, the policy response to lock the economy down, has actually increased the wealth. The same way the Great Depression resulted in although you had the economy deflate, It did result in a mass transfer of wealth into a few wealthy hands, and a great concentration occurred. And that also occurred during the Second World War. It occurred over a longer term over the Cold War. Of course, the War on Terror, all the spending that entailed, you know, 20 years, 15 years ago. And so in all these crises, there's always someone getting rich, and there's always a mass transfer of wealth, and this crisis doesn't seem to be any different.
When this first hit, within 2 days, I read in the Financial Times, and this was all over the place, that $2 trillion were going to be printed and pumped into the stock market. Mm-hmm. That's a mystification. What it means is it's being given to these oligarch firms, these conglomerates, who didn't really have, you know, a cash flow problem, although their irrationality, their investing irrationality, led them to some trouble. The bailout in 2008 was an outrageous. And I was shocked that there was no real substantial response to it. That's one of the things I had no optimism after that. They know that they can't do that again. So to bail out the system for the same reason they had to bail them out in 2008, and these bailouts have been continuing for a long time. It's trillions and trillions of dollars that could go to relieve the debts of other people or going to these giant conglomerates. The Anti-Defamation League has demanded this too. Yeah.
Yes. bailout money for the ADL. Yeah. But it's interesting. Is we don't know really. I mean, obviously, I mean the Federal Reserve System, the banking system, it's a Masonic occulted system, and everything happens in secret. And this is what they do with the currency. The money itself is a weapon against the people. It's debt-based currency. It's usurious debt-based system. It's inherently it's self-negating, unstable. But it does persist. It's maybe unstable, but it regenerates itself because the way the very bailouts that you're citing, they can just every time there's a crisis, they can just churn out a crisis, create a problem, whether it's a war, you know, 9/11 or the War on Terror or this thing, and we have to do it. We have to create $4 trillion in asset buyback. That was like this group. Was it BlackRock? A Jewish outfit run by Larry Fink, I think is his name. They're given the sole, they're the ones going to handle it for the Treasury Department, where they're going to buy, Treasury Department is going to buy all these, worthless assets from the Fed's balance sheet and make them whole. And there'll be no public accounting, to the public or anything on these purchases. But the public got $1,200 relief checks, so that's okay.
Some of us.
Yeah.
Again, libertarians need to shut up and listen here for a second. There is no substantial difference between the public sector and the private sector. Most public sector operations are farmed out to the private sector anyway. Mm-hmm. Bureaucrats in the state sector are from the private sector, especially at the upper levels. And of course, the Fed really skirts that difference. There needs to be a new vocabulary to describe this, because the vocabulary in political science isn't keeping up with what's going on. It's archaic to refer to public and private sectors here. The government, to use that stupid term, is essentially private sector interests, whether it be in an official government institution or out of it. So that's one of the biggest problems. And libertarians still have this superstition that there's this private sector and this public sector. There's a revolving door to the point now where there really isn't much of a distinction. So, and this is something that Paul Craig Roberts has been pushing very hard. So bailing out big conglomerates is something to be expected in an oligarchic system. And as you mentioned, the elimination of currency, putting everything electronically, may be the result of their crashing the dollar. The dollar was under extreme downward pressure anyway, with the de-dollarization in Russia or China, mm-hmm. which they've been, the Japanese can't keep buying these. They don't have that much. So this is it's the system was on the verge of collapse in January, and the virus just coincidentally came out of nowhere to essentially rescue the system, because now no one's going to blame GE or GM for getting all of this money, when of course it's the virus that can be blamed for everything. And once this is, assuming that anything goes back to normal, assuming that happens, how easy is it going to be for them to claim that there's a second wave? They can manufacture whatever they want and then bring this all again. This is something they're always going to have in reserve to use whenever they want. And if not a virus, they could do something else. They could use Russians controlling elections and idiotic things like this. And you always have, and of course it depends on a totally controlled press. And I really wish that Donald Trump would create his own media company. That would be a coup that would change everything. But you also mentioned another point, and I've been thinking this from the beginning. The Democrats, and the Republicans, Democrats, I don't make a distinction, but the Democratic slate is one of the worst, I think. It's like 1984 all over again. Walter Mondale, yeah. You know, they're going to be destroyed. Bernie could have invigorated them, but who do they pick? You know, one of the worst possible. It's like Bob Dole in 1996.
Yeah.
Who barely even campaigned. And he is so vulnerable compared to Trump. They're looking at low turnout. It makes a lot of sense. If Trump was to win either by a lot or by a little, they have a built-in excuse for trying to invalidate the election. They could say people were afraid that there is a lack of volunteers, that the polling places are in dangerous areas, that there's too much possibility of illness. They have a million different ways to go. They could parse Trump's words and everything else, and they could, you know, invalidate, especially if the turnout's very low, which it may well be. So this is a built-in excuse to invalidate the election, or at least challenge the election, even in a legal sense. Because you know how the regime has responded to the Trump presidency. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like it. The vicious, the absolute venom in regular mainstream news programs. I used to think it was bad for Reagan and Bush. My God, I've never seen this. The closest anyone has got is Nixon after 72. And even that wasn't that bad. They will do anything to keep Trump from having a second term and putting more people on the Supreme Court. That, you know, they'll do whatever they need to. There were 4 assassination attempts on Trump during the campaign. They shut down his rallies in Chicago and in New Mexico, which is completely illegal. That's, you know, almost invalidating the election. Right? If it happened in the third world, the U.S. would have invaded it. So they will do anything to keep him from being reelected. There's no doubt that, again, it's only a part of it, like you say, but it's just a side effect for these guys, a side benefit to what challenged the election in a few months.
Yeah, a terrible precedent has been set, and that's right. There has to be an accounting for this because they set the precedent now where they can close churches, shut down the economy on the slightest of pretext. I mean, a flu, someone sneezes in a grocery store and has generalized symptoms, or you just have, you know, what's a good example? You know, Fauci is talking about the second wave. Well, he and his other experts are creating a condition for that by encouraging people and keeping people from going outside, engaging their immune system, exercising, getting vitamin D, working in these things, and, you know, putting everyone in a distressed, high anxiety state, which is bad for health. And then they're not going to, and they'll turn around and say, look, I told you everyone got sick again. Well, you created the situation where people didn't go out and, you know, you closed the beaches or, you know, closed the community pools. And going outside, this is science, by the way. Going outside is healthy. Staying inside, staring at a computer screen, looking at the death count go up and up and up isn't healthy. And that's exactly what they're encouraging. And they're creating a mass psychosis intentionally. And this is what, outfits like the RAND Corporation or Tavistock Institute or come up with, how to scare the hell out of people. That's what the state always does. That's to scare the hell out of the American people. And they do it. It's just pick your boogeyman, you know, whether it's, you know, Hitler or the Kaiser or evil communists or Osama bin Laden. And now it's a virus, an invisible enemy, you know, that they can't even really prove exists in the first place. We have to take their, you know, we have to take pretty much like believe them on that. Whether if you want to trust the CDC and World Health Organization, be my guest. Yeah, Tedros, he's a great guy, handpicked by Bill Gates, works for Bill Gates. So yeah, there has to be that. This is why they're again. You see that as the narrative collapses or just gradually erodes, they sort of keep up with the program. They got to keep up the propaganda. This is why you see the mask wearing now. This is why you see the continual lockdowns and the sort of the gradual emergence, and then the talk of have to do this. We have to get, you know, have to have the mandatory vaccine. We have to have immunity passports. These things are all totalitarian measures, which no one would accept under any other circumstances, except for this, manufactured a public health crisis. You know, it's really something to behold, but it's the public can't let them get away with it. That's what I'm saying. It's
the public is another mystification.
Yeah,
really, the public really means the major press and the big foundations and the universities.
Yeah,
I do note though, and I think this is maybe what you're getting at, is I'm detecting people who were either moderates before or even apolitical.
Yeah,
now being very angry. And reading all kinds of things that they wouldn't read before. People who – I've seen this all over Facebook. You know, I didn't really care before. But now the bailouts and everything, you've been, you know, people are wondering. They're seeing the stupid headlines like 8 people have this virus. The country shut down.
Yeah.
And no one's noticing this. The massive bailouts, which were in mainstream publications. I mean, they state it in a different way. Like they use TARP and these kinds of acronyms most people don't even know. And I'm noticing that they're describing it. The New York Times had a few articles describing the method of the bailout in really just arcane terms that no one could understand, which is, you know, very much done on purpose. Oligarchies generally operate in secret. They can't have people know that wealth is really the only route to power. Now, because of the degeneration of the system, you have oligarchs like Bill Gates openly dictating policy. And a man with no education, a man with agents everywhere, who has a larger legal establishment than the Justice Department, who brought the U.S. to its knees in the case in the 1990s, the restraint of trade case in the 90s, they're simply more powerful. Corporate America is more powerful than the state. The state is dependent on corporate America. The military is dependent on it. They all are. Military uses mercenaries all over the place. So, private sector people are now saying we don't have to hide anymore. We could come out and start dictating policy right on the press. On the other hand, and Michael Hoffman talks about this so much, the revelation of the method idea, it is a huge risk. You saw what happened on Bill Gates' Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
He actually has a full-time guy deleting all the hate comments against him.
Yes.
He really does. I mean, it was flooded. It shut down the servers for a while. A lot of us helped shut down the snitch lines.
You know, yes, I heard about that.
Yeah, Dunder Mifflin has had about, 10,000 complaints. And so it can't be taken seriously anymore. The system of informants. And so you do have, I don't know if you want to use the word public for it, but you do have people who are getting very serious about this. There's armed protesters at the state capitals. I know you've seen them. People who didn't care about any of this stuff before are protesting at the state capitals. Some courts are upholding it. Some courts are rejecting it. This is creating a division that none of us could have predicted a year ago. So there's good news and there's bad news.
Yeah, there's an opportunity for a great awakening. And I've made this point that really going into this, we weren't headed in the right direction anyway. And so by making this great leap forward, this attempt to sort of impose this technocratic slave state with this crisis, they've exposed themselves. And now normal people are forced to acknowledge this. I think David Icke has said that this oligarchic cult that runs the world has stepped into the room and the door has clicked behind them closed. And now there they are before us revealed. What are we going to do about it? And there is great exposure. You're right, because oligarchy relies on this thin veneer of democracy, of rule of law, which doesn't really exist. And now they're coming out in the open and saying these things. And the biggest sign of the greatest sign I can see is that Bill Gates that becomes broadly accepted as public enemy number one, although he himself is just a sort of like a figure representing this group. But it's very important that people look at him as sort of this creepy nerd who wants to impose his weird agenda on people, and a broad acknowledgement of that by the public is very healthy. It's also because it's true. It's not just an illusion. It's true. He's an evil man and he wants to impose an evil agenda. I mean, he's coming out talking about his biometric tattoo or something. That's like Mark of the Beast stuff. And how did you, that's just, this stuff is insane. There was a Ventura County in California. There was a public health administrator, I think a Dr. Levine, another Hindu, I think. And he said, or I think it was Lowen. I forget what name it was. But anyway, he said that he was talking about the contact tracing program and how people, some people have to be removed from their homes and put in safe, I guess, quarters, some sort of FEMA camp. I don't know. He suggested they'd be taken away and installed, you know, during quarantine. And after he gave that talk, he received death threats from people. He actually left their names. And then he had to walk it back a little bit. And you saw that, you know, the governor in Kentucky where he was held, he hung in effigy for, because, you know, he's actually harassed people at churches and stuff like that. Really made, he's made the people in Kentucky, their life miserable. And he's shocked that some people would be compelled to hang him in effigy. That's a political statement. That's called feedback, governor. Okay. You screwed a lot of people over. Okay. Without any concern for the hundreds of thousands, not millions of Kentuckians whose lives have been destroyed because of you. And he's shocked that this would happen. He's shocked that there might be some consequence for his actions. And these people have to feel that there's consequences for their actions. That's the only way to get at them. Because we're led by psychopaths and idiots, you know, and sometimes they're both. And the only way to get them to do the right thing or to stand aside is to have them have some sort of fear for their own physical well-being at the final analysis. Because, I mean, I forget it was Governor Whitmore out in Michigan where she was saying how the protest, well, they come across as being so hostile. You know, well, it's hostile to lock people down, close their businesses, and deny them a means of providing for their family. That's not an act of hostility. I mean, these people, you know, it's amazing just how indifferent they are to the suffering that they impose on people. But that's a mark of a psychopath, isn't it? So,
well, I think you're a little bit too diplomatic for my taste there.
Okay.
but there's a few, the risk that they're taking with this, there's a few things. One of the big ones is that oligarchy kind of depends on a middle class that has a lot to lose.
Mm-hmm.
More and more people become immiserated, to use Marx's term, the less that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
People are afraid to say things because they have property and they have kids in school and anything can happen. Social sanction is far more powerful than any state operation.
Mm-hmm.
But when they don't have anything to defend, now you have highly intelligent, motivated Americans that have had everything. How dangerous is that?
Yes.
It's one thing if they're idiots, but you have successful people now. And I keep forgetting that there's a big difference between millionaires and billionaires. Because there's a lot of millionaires going broke. I mentioned on my The Daily Nationalist on Radio Albion that the company that makes underground bunkers has seen its business go up 350%. These are people going into very wealthy neighborhoods and digging bunkers that are, you know, they're preppers. All of a sudden, it's not a big problem anymore. And a lot of their wealth, and especially their gold, is being put under there because they're afraid of someone doing an FDR of confiscating gold.
Yeah.
So now you have very wealthy people arming themselves and creating these bunkers. My God. They're really pushing. And I guess the thing is that we don't, that from the point of view of the regime, and I use the word regime technically, it refers to this public-private combination, you know, major media elites, academic elites, government, private sector, working like the Bilderberg Group. Mm-hmm. That's what regime with a capital R. That's kind of the new word to deep state isn't general enough. So you know, when these people are worried, you know, how many millionaires with all their connections and their intelligence and everything else can you afford to alienate? And on top of it, having lots of smart middle class people now with nothing to lose. What's more dangerous than a highly intelligent man with nothing to lose? So they're really pushing this. Not to mention, in fact, you have police departments all over the place refusing to enforce some of this stuff.
Because these cops are lower or middle class. Yeah, they see that. Yeah.
And, you know, especially local cops, they know these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to put these guys out of business. Now, when this goes, if it goes back to normal and these court cases start coming up, guys who have been cited now, they go in front of a judge and they say, Your Honor, either my life is destroyed or I take a risk here. The state doesn't have the power to tell me where to open my business or where to go or what to wear. And what's the judge going to say? You know, yeah, no, you should have gone bankrupt. That's not in the state's interest. Not all judges are going to think that way, but it's a very powerful argument. To simply go in front of a judge and say, please, I want to see the legislative foundation for these emergency powers. I know in the federal level, the emergency legislation, there's several books that collect them all. None of them give any power for shutting down businesses. Emergency legislation at the federal level, and of course the state level can't contradict it, gives the federal government more power over federal resources, like, you know, National Guard and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The emergency legislation that exists has nothing to do with shutting down business or telling people what to wear. Go in front of a judge and argue this. I mean, there's going to be plenty of judges that say, okay, what can I say? So when these court cases start coming up, I'm dying to see how this goes. So again, if I was a business owner, I'd take a chance, fight it in court later on.
Yeah, and good example was that salon owner in Texas who, you know, who let herself go before a judge. A judge ended up looking very bad in that case. And then the political pressure was such that the governors and the state attorney general and governor stepped in, and she was vindicated. And you need more people doing that. And again, if everyone does it, they simply can't enforce it anyway. And that's a situation because we're not going to be able to like vote our ways out of this problem. It's not I don't think electoral or politics really is going to be the way to address this. That isn't to say that I don't think you shouldn't go to court and sue. And you shouldn't put pressure on your local politicians, particularly your sheriff. Sheriffs are a very important position. And the more local, the better. And perhaps this could be, I myself have ignored local politics. And maybe I shouldn't have, because it does matter. We're seeing now how it was local politics where if you're somewhat familiar with Agenda 21 and even that Event 201, how I think in the past 10 years, I think past agents of Bill Gates and the interests he represents have infiltrated themselves into the state and local governments the same way that Agenda 21 does it, through apparent local initiatives, but it's all controlled at the center. And there's various executive orders that these things have implemented. And there is a lot of what's being achieved with the lockdown is consistent with the Agenda 21 operation, which is sort of the immiseration, getting people to abandon their property. These things, economic depression does that. Put a little if you have some court cases and you have a sort of where people simply don't want to abide by these laws, and we're getting a lot of that. We're seeing the news coverage about that, how some of the press is simply amazed at some people going out and getting sun and not wearing masks and all that, but then I think as we're getting close to the end of the interview, we're seeing now in some of the news reports, how they're trying to stoke the race issue now to getting into the summer, and how they're kind of that shooting down in Georgia actually occurred in February, with the so-called jogger who was casing construction sites, and he had an altercation, was shot dead. But you've had a case up in Minnesota, and I think now the regime will kind of create some diversions, like maybe an international incident or even a lot of, they'll stoke the race issue now to get people's attention away from what's going on, with the continuing COVID-19 operation, which is, again, imposed economic depression and immiseration of the people. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, every revolutionary government in the last 300 years has emptied the prisons. That was both the case in Russia and in France and many other places. You've noted, especially back in April, governors releasing thousands of prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, sheriffs are going on TV saying, don't buy guns. Yeah, that's the wrong thing to do. The LA County sheriff said that. I think the racial issues have always been to make sure that cops are afraid to do their job, that ordinary people are afraid to do anything if they're white and the other person isn't. And for these people to live in fear, you add social distancing to that, and we had no civil society to begin with, but now it's completely collapsed. And again, with the whole psychological factor of people now being afraid to get closer to people physically, even long after this is over.
Yes, yeah.
And they can always hang it over your head. Or, you know, you do too much together, it'll resurrect itself. And if not this, they could do something else. They know now this is going to work, but they are taking a gigantic chance. But using the racial stuff, the creation of chaos is something that revolutionary governments have been doing since revolution existed. And it's also an oligarchical method. But releasing prisoners, if there's one institution that can isolate people, it's prisons. They have isolation units. What has that to do with letting people go? They're in the perfect position to isolate. It is isolation. So what would be the purpose of letting these guys go? And they are violent criminals, and they have reoffended. And remember in the beginning here, in New York and places like that, they weren't going to arrest people. You had to murder 20 people to get into trouble. So they're letting criminals run wild. Mm-hmm. And now with the racial thing, if they're non-white, and they usually are, you have good cops who are now petrified. I don't know how cops can function right now, especially in the inner city.
Yeah, and again, it's you if there's ever an incident where there, where a black man is either shot by the cops or for resisting arrest or something, or an incident between a white man and a black man, it's all over the headlines. And even if if you look at it where the black man is looks like to be the assailant, it becomes headlines. But then if there's I think you could report hourly about a black on white crime, but it never makes the headlines. Just recently that an elderly couple shot dead by a black guy in a cemetery, but then again, all we hear about this guy Ahmaud Arbery down in Georgia, but the end, the press wants, again, the various interests within the press want to promote that narrative because that gets everyone's attention. And of course, when you have protests in Minnesota, no one's worrying about social distancing during these protests, right? I mean, how do you protest in social distancing?
Well, at least they're wearing masks.
Yeah, they're
wearing. Yeah. I think a lot of them are wearing masks. Yeah. They're being civic minded.
Yeah, being civic minded. So, but anyway, so yeah, I think a lot of distraction. I think a lot of this is a distraction. Isn't to say that there might be a case here and there where it's legitimate and that shouldn't be ignored if there's an act of injustice. I'm not saying that, but if you look at some of these cases and you kind of burrow into it, you'll see that obviously this is being exploited by all the usual suspects to create yet another distraction, also create more of a racial divide. That's divide and conquer. You're right. Releasing the prisons, creating a crisis. Actually, the government profits from crime. So that's another, understanding of things, or the state actually likes it. It was the Samuel Francis that came up with the term about the anarcho-tyranny. And that's what we live under now, So a bewildering amount of regulations and rules, but your basic rights to property and life aren't being protected. And you're being denied the means to protect them yourself when they're saying, no, go out and get guns. And by the way, we're releasing violent felons. Thank you. Thank you so much. Anything else? I think we covered it. Or
you notice how during this entire discussion, we rarely talked about anything having to do with medicine or science. This is all completely economic and sociological. That's what's at issue here.
Yeah. That's another thing I heard when they're talking about the experts. And when you're talking like experts, whether it's Dr. Birx or Fauci of the coronavirus task force, and they're the experts. So really, you're talking about shutting down an economy. Are you an expert on the sociological and psychological and effects of shutting down an economy? I mean, no, you're not. So if you're just worried about the science of it or the medicine of it, well, there's much greater dimension than that, because if you're just focusing on on an infectious disease which may or may not exist, what about the collateral damage of shutting down an economy? It's fairly obvious. If you shut down an economy, you're going to kill millions more people, and create multi-generational poverty, and create all types of social conflict, even war, if you allow our economies to collapse. But then again, that's not in Dr. Fauci's bailiwick.
Yeah. And then you could blame a virus,
mm-hmm.
and the Chinese. That's very, very convenient.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, World War II, you blame the Japanese for bombing Pearl Harbor. It's a very simple explanation, and it sells. Right?
This is what most people can comprehend. Anything more complicated than that, they shut their brain down. It all comes down to self-interest and people petrified of being marginalized because of it. But you have a situation where they don't have anything to lose anymore. They're marginalized already.
Yes.
And that's the chance that the regime is taking here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame that it takes like a crisis and suffering for people to wake up. You know, it really is frustrating because you like to think you could have a soft landing and a peaceful turnaround. And I don't, you know, I don't savor suffering. I don't look forward to it. I'm not you know, what do you call it? A collapsitarian or an accelerationist, because I know within all that is millions of people suffering. I know what's like, I know what occurred in the Ukraine. I also know what they're willing to do. People will talk about this, you know, people are sort of, why are they doing this? This is so stupid. It's not stupid. It's evil. I mean, economically, it made no sense to do what occurred in the Ukraine in the 1930s, yet it was done because it served an ideological and political, you know, other interests. And I think what we're seeing today with the attempt to collapse the U.S. economy, you're serving the interests of the oligarchs, and they're willing to let millions, literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people suffer in the process. You know, so.
Well, people are used to defining, you know, tyranny as something only that the state can do.
Mm-hmm.
But power in the West lies with private sector elites who aren't subject to any kind of constitutional. In fact, they're protected by the Constitution because, of course, corporations are considered people.
Yes.
But since they're the ones who are doing most of this, people can't wrap their brains around it. The whole notion of a regime is way beyond even educated Americans' vocabulary. So we're at a point we can't even have a conversation with a lot of these people. We're not using the words in the same way.
Yeah, we saw that with sort of the global homo and woke capital, and people were – I talk to libertarians or people who are libertarian, conservative, free market types. They don't understand, although they may be conservative in their own personal lives, that what's happening, that sort of this changing of society, sort of this imposition of insanity, like whether it's transgenderism and degeneration of society, it's largely being done by corporations. And they don't understand that a corporation itself will have its own agenda in enslaving or changing society, creating atomization. They think that the corporation only cares about its quarterly reports, its profits. Why would they, you know, insult or harm their customer base? And it's much more complicated than that. Good example, you talk about the power of corporations and how we see this today, how we have the state, but really behind the state, really behind the technocrats too. We say the technocracies, the technocrats are in charge, but the technocrats are front men for people like Bill Gates. You know,
in an oligarchy,
yeah.
Politicians have one purpose. When things go bad, they could be blamed for it.
Yes.
No one blames a corporations because that's too esoteric. No one really knows how the investment policies of these different mutual funds and everything else. No one could understand that. So politicians are easy to blame. Like Ronald Reagan had anything to do with the expansion of the economy in the 80s. Like he was controlling investment policy. State has no control over this. But they're there to take the blame when something goes wrong. This is what a politician does. The average bill that these guys vote on is like 1,000 pages long. You know damn well they didn't read it.
Yes, I know.
These guys have no power. Yeah. These guys have no real power. It's done at the committee level. It's done at the corporate level. And the government couldn't last for 5 minutes without the corporations giving them money, the banks giving them money, and the private sector, which carries out most of these bureaucratic tasks. The fact that you have people who actually believe that corporate America is a conservative force really just makes me very sad. Karl Marx said that capital was revolutionary. Capital has always been the so-called free market mythology. Is revolutionary. It dissolved all the older social bonds. In Marxism, capitalism is absolutely essential for that reason. He supported free trade because free trade breaks down nations and these kind of barriers. Therefore, socialism can come into exist, but not without it. Capitalism is a revolutionary, dissolving, chaotic force that then paves the way for the communist system later. But again, I might as well be speaking Greek here including the average educated American.
Yeah, cultural Marxism is a mirror image of cultural capitalism.
You know? Well, I don't have to say that. We could just say, you know, Marxism and capitalism are almost identical.
Yeah.
And Solzhenitsyn has been saying that for years and years and years. I have a paper explaining all the similarities. There are hundreds of them. one is private sector, the other is public sector. But really, these distinctions are just, it's verbal. It's the same group of people. It's the same type of control. And it's the same destruction of societies.
Yeah, it's why Rockefeller was so happy to invest in China, and create the state capitalist system there, which now they're trying to maneuver. But the whole, good example of that is, you want to know who really has the power. And a good example is in the 1950s, you had the Reese Committee hearings on the power of the foundations. Of course, with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, we're seeing how powerful that foundation is, because virtually every organization that advised the states to impose a lockdown have a direct link to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, including the London Imperial College of London and Neil Ferguson and that fiasco out there. But they investigated the power of the foundations and some of the things they were involved with. And of course, when they started investigating it, we saw who really had the power, because the committee was dissolved. And the foundations were allowed to go on and do their thing, continue doing their thing. And the whole thing was shut down, and it's pretty much put in the dustbin of history. Not many people know about it, right? I mean, not many people know about the Reese Committee hearings and what it revealed about the true nature of power in the United States and in the West, So.
Well, I've been saying this for 20 years, and there's a handful of others. Anthony Sutton and Solzhenitsyn and a few others, usually from abroad. And finally, some of this stuff is sinking in to a few of the more sensitive. It might be inchoate at the moment, but it is sinking in. And they're really promoting it. Bill, Melinda Gates, Bill is bad enough, but then you have her. This is almost a parody. But you mentioned these are figureheads, like George Soros.
Mm-hmm.
He represents a huge group of oligarchs. He's old, he's at the end of his career. What does he care at this point? So he could take the fall for it all. But every major company has a foundation. And every one of these foundations, go to the Capital Research Institute. They track all these people. They give exclusively to liberal organizations, including big oil and everything else. Social solvents are what these people need to function. Consumption doesn't do very well if you have other means of defining yourself. Therefore, they have to simply destroy social bonds, and then you're completely dependent, whether it be on the press or objects, things that you can buy and consume to define you and make you happy. That's in their interest. So they're not just short-term actors, they're long-term actors. You don't get to be that wealthy by being a moron. You can be a psychotic, but psychotics are usually highly intelligent and very deliberate in their actions.
Mm-hmm. And again, but yet you were led to believe that these are benevolent people who have humanity's best interest at heart, and so they practice philanthropy. But really, it really is misanthropy disguised as philanthropy. And that was the strategy the Rockefellers kind of developed back in the, when they had Ivy Lee set up the Rockefeller Foundation in the, they started, their foundation started funding things like medical schools and colleges and endowing chair, University of Chicago there itself right there. And also, control. Look how much money that Bill Gates invests in media, the media that gives him the softball questions. So he buys more or less PR on the media, and people consume this as if this is news. These are journalists asking tough questions to this guy. Of course, all he gets are softball questions. No one asks him about his disastrous immunization or vaccination program in India. There's no awkward moments like that on MSNBC or CNN or anything like that.
These guys have given a huge amount of money to media companies, and media companies have their own foundations as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can go and go to deep web and find out this stuff. But how many people are going to do that? How many people would even know where to look or how power operates? Power is far more complicated than people realize. But thank God, history is made by a handful of fanatical minorities. These are the only people who ever matter, the only people who ever make history. So let the sheep do what they want. They'll support us once, we start to make sense and start to gain traction. They're irrelevant. History is made by determined, fanatical, cohesive minorities. And that's why we don't have to worry about numbers.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the long arc, look at this. Ultimately, God's in control. So it's not a reason to sit back and do nothing, but it is to, if you're feeling anxious or depressed, remember that. Because that way it'll, if anything, look at this as a reason to be energized. And this is an opportunity, actually. And, you know, I've said this to some guests, I'll say it to you too, is you've probably been very frustrated in the course of your career, devoting your life to researching these things and not getting any traction with the public because there's too much food in the refrigerator. Well, now there's an opportunity to get more attention, to get their attention. And, we've probably prayed for this moment, but then again, be careful what you pray for, right? We have our opportunity, and it just isn't under the circumstances that we may wish for, but it is what we've been given, so you have to make the most of it. It is an opportunity.
So. Well, either the phrase stand up and be counted is important. There's going to be a day where we have to give an accounting of what we do.
Yes.
And it's so easy to conform and to do what you're told. It's very, very easy. But when life becomes more and more difficult because of it, the opposite starts to be true.
Mm-hmm.
People are terrified. They know what the regime is capable of. They may not fully understand it. But being marginalized and being mocked and being sent away is a very powerful motivator, far more so than getting into trouble or getting a civil citation or something like that. That's why media control, Agenda 21, they have a whole section on media control,
mm-hmm.
centralizing information. Information is absolutely essential to these people. Information, of course, isn't knowledge. Most of these people are abysmally ignorant. That's not the point. Money seems to be its own talisman. So, that's where we are. I think a lot of people know this, but whether they want to admit it is a separate issue.
Things aren't normal anymore. I don't know, maybe that's a good thing. In the final analysis, see how this plays out. The people that started this may not finish it. But at the end of the day to day, we have to, speak truth to power, have courage, and do what's right. And that's the only thing we can really do here.
Well, the only thing I could say to people who are on the fence is that you're going to suffer one way or the other. This is an age of suffering. You're going to be plunged into pain one way or the other. The question is that pain going to be for a purpose, a meaning, or is it going to be meaningless? And that's up to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So. Okay, well, Dr. Johnson, thank you.
You are most welcome. I really appreciate it. You're an excellent interviewer, and I love this program.
Thank you. People, follow your work. Go to rushjournal.org, correct?
Go to rushjournal.org, and you may notice that there is a donation button there. Mm-hmm. That is not a decoration. I do this full time. This is not a job for a hobbyist. A lot of us are doing this. A lot of us are in a lot of trouble, especially these days.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those of you who can, we desperately need your support. This is my full-time gig. And if you gained anything from me or this program, anything else, we desperately need your support if you're able to give it.
Yeah, give what you can afford. And also, if you can't do that, spread the word. And then hopefully the more people are exposed to your work, more people maybe can give, and everyone gives a little bit, and then you can continue with your research.
We don't have a university or a think tank. We rely on our readers, which gives us a great degree of freedom, but it is a struggle. So yes. For those who have given, I really appreciate it, and these kind of opportunities are great too.
So our poverty is our bona fides. So
and it's our freedom.
It's our freedom, yep. So, okay, well, thank you so much. I'll let you go. I will post this soon. When I do, I'll send you the link.
All right, my friend. I appreciate it.
Good night, then. Take care up there. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yep, I will.